My guest at this time is Frank Gaffney. He served as an Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration, and he is now the president of the Center for Security Policy here in Washington. We want to get his reaction today to the latest developments in eastern Ukraine and the lack of response from pro-Russian forces, as they're being described in the media, to abide by deadlines to give up control of government buildings in that part of the country. We also want to get his insights on the Obama administration's public reaction to all this. And Frank, it's always good to have you with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Craig.
Let's start by identifying who these militants or pro-Russian forces are, as they're being described in the media. A lot of folks believe that these are simply members of the Russian military that aren't in traditional Russian military gear, and so they're not identified by their uniform that way. But is that essentially who we're dealing with here?
It's a little hard to say unless they actually do get identified more directly by perhaps being taken captive and being forced to fess up. My guess is, working assumption, is that they're probably Russian special forces or other agents provocateurs, as they say, that have been put in there for the purpose of creating conditions under which Russia can claim to have grounds to intervene, much as it did in Crimea. And whether they are literally folks operating without insignia, but nonetheless uniformed personnel of Russia, or whether they're even perhaps simply locals who are very sympathetic, maybe have been trained as militia or paramilitaries by the Russians. The practical effect is that it all comes down to the guys who are going to be used as the leading edge of the sword, if you will, for the Russian military as it moves, I think, to take over eastern Ukraine.
Does that give the temporary Ukrainian government more leeway in cracking down on them, since the Russians are at least for the moment claiming that they don't have any direct ties to these folks? Does that allow them to crack down further, or will Putin still have that latitude because he considers them sympathetic to his cause?
I think the Ukrainians are under no illusion, one way or the other, that whatever they do with these guys will be used as a casus belli by the Russians, that they will seize upon it, irrespective of whether they are actually their own personnel. Arguably, if they are their own personnel, they might act with even more dispatch for the purposes of trying to suppress information about who these guys are and what they're doing. But either way, I think that the Russians are making no bones about it. They're ready to move into Ukraine proper, as they did Crimea very recently. I think in short order they will seek to create conditions under which at least pieces of it will be appealing for further help from the Russians, declare their independence of Ukraine, and seek to be annexed by Moscow, all of which is, let's be clear, being orchestrated by Vladimir Putin.
Do you believe that he'll be satisfied with parts of eastern Ukraine, or does he want the whole thing ultimately?
The question really is, does he want more than the whole thing of Ukraine? I think the answer to that is probably yes. I think that he will insist upon, at the very minimum, that all of Ukraine, once again, is subject to Russian dominion, as it was under the previous president, Yanukovych. Whether his appetite extends beyond that to Transdniester or to Latvia and Estonia, or perhaps other former Soviet republics who have Russian populations, is anybody's guess. But I think that the likely prospects here, the heavy betting should be on he's going to continue to going for as much as he can, because he senses no real opposition from either the administration here in Washington or from the Europeans.
Let's talk a little bit about the Obama administration's handling of this. And just today, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said, in response to these militants still taking over more facilities in eastern Ukraine, quote, "I can assure you that Russia's further provocations and transgressions will come with a cost." Any insight onto what the price might be, and whether talk like that has any impact on what comes next?
This isn't the first time that that's been said by the president, by John Kerry, the Secretary of State, let alone by the White House press spokesman, and I think that it's been completely discounted by Vladimir Putin, because he knows, A, our capacity to impose greater costs is considerably limited by both the condition of our own military, our economy, not least our leadership, and because we've failed to take any appreciable steps to date. You know, I'm fond of saying that the extent of our support for Ukraine to this point has been to provide meals ready to eat to a country ready to be eaten. This is hardly a disincentive to Vladimir Putin, and I think he's behaving accordingly.
We've obviously seen the administration try to downplay the threat to the region, which you obviously believe is much greater than they're stating publicly. You've got Jay Carney today at the briefing saying that he believes Russia is a threat to Ukraine, but not a threat to the United States. And, of course, a number of days ago in Europe, the President of the United States said that Russia is a regional power, clearly suggesting that it's not something that he's overly worried about. So what's the consequence of that public description of Russia?
Well, you know, a lot of the analogies to the late 1930s are overblown, but I can't help hearing in his statements an echo of Neville Chamberlain saying that Czechoslovakia was a small country far away. Ukraine is a large country far away. It yearns to be part of the free world. I believe the war we're in, as we've talked about before, Greg, is best thought of as the war for the free world, and whether it's the assaults against the free world by the Islamists or by the Chinese or by the Russians or by Hugo Chavez and his successors or anybody else, to think that it doesn't matter to U.S. security when other parts of the free world or aspirants to being part of it are lopped off at the hands of thugs who have very bad intentions towards us as well, is the worst sort of short-sightedness, and really it shows an ignorance of the hard lessons of history that I think should cause all of us to realize that we are poorly led, and it is exposing us to great dangers.
We're talking with Frank Gaffney, president of the Center for Security Policy. And one other issue Jay Carney responded to today, sir, and this is quoting from TheHill.com, Carney accused the Russian military of taking, quote, provocative and unprofessional, quote, actions when a warplane buzzed a U.S. Navy ship in the region. I believe that was in the Black Sea. What do you think Putin's trying to determine by that little tactic?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. This is a bully. A bully will typically behave, whether it's an individual on the playground, as most of us had some experience of, or whether it's a national leader of a country that he believes is one of the world's great powers. When they engage in bullying behavior and it is not aggressively countered, they typically continue to engage in it and oftentimes miscalculate or simply calculate sensibly that they can go still further at the expense of their would-be victims. This is the kind of thing that can lead to conflagrations, frankly, because suddenly one finds that the response is mandatory, no longer elective. I'm worried that the president's failure, as is so often the case, and this is what the lessons of history teach us, things get worse the longer you defer acting on them in this kind of circumstance. And I think that the buzzing of our ship is a precursor to probably even more belligerent action on the part of the Russians, and it's almost certainly going to get some people killed. I hope not many.
Frank, last question. As I don't need to tell you that when you talk about the threat posed by Putin's intentions here and the lessons of history, a lot of folks look at the possibility of U.S. getting involved here, probably not militarily, but in some way greater than we are right now. And they say, both on the right and the left, look, we just got out of Iraq. We still are in Afghanistan, although we're pulling back there. Every hot spot in the world can't be our problem. What do you tell them?
Well, I'm not interested in getting into a military operation in Ukraine either. My experience tells me that what you wind up having to do is go to war under even less favorable circumstances if you haven't taken steps that make it unnecessary to do so. I've said from the beginning of this crisis that I think what we need, Greg, is something akin to the kind of strategy that the president I had the privilege of serving, Ronald Reagan, followed in taking down the Soviet Union back in the 1980s, a comprehensive program that did not involve the use of military force directly against the Russians, but that through economic measures, through political warfare, through information operations, through intelligence activities, ultimately defeated the Soviet Union and compelled it to liberate the people that it had enslaved. I think a similar kind of strategy is needed at this moment, and if we execute it quickly, I think we may well be able to stave off the kind of conflict that I suspect is going to be coming our way if we don't.
Frank, on that sober note, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, as always, for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
Frank Gaffney is a former Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Reagan. He's now President of the Center for Security Policy. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.